Historia Day, Literary Way, Rabbi Modcha, Steinberg. Already.
Start with a very short history lesson, which you probably all know, but just to refresh memories, because it's germane to my drosha. Avraham Avinu was born in 1948. And he spent, we don't actually know where he was born, whether it was Choron or Ur-Kasdim, but he was spent a lot of his youth in Ur-Kasdim.
When he was 96.
In those days, Ur-Kasdim had, if not all, representatives of every nation of the world, the 70 nations that are written out in Noach, all very great, powerful people, that each one of them created a nation. The Mitzrayim, they created a nation. Poras, Tiras, Ashur created a nation. Each one of them, the British blessed them, and they had loads and loads of children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and they created nations. But at the beginning of this history, they were all congregated, this representation of them, each one, in Ur-Kasdim. And Avraham Avinu actually had to debate with them about the merit of Avodah Zorah against, or the lack of merit of Avodah Zorah, against serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They were all against him. The Ramban says the main difficulty of Avraham was the fact that he was the only person that held his view. And it's one thing to give up your life when you know exactly what you're doing, but when you're confronted by hundreds of clever men from all different nations, all saying you're wrong, that's a much more difficult, much more difficult. And he prevailed in his arguments, so they tried to kill him. In 1996, the nation split. That means Avraham Avinu was already 48. The Rambam says actually that's the moment when he realized the full truth of what he was saying. The interesting thing is that the nations did not. You wake up one morning and find that we're all speaking different languages. You'd think, just one minute, something's going on here. There must be somebody in charge of everything, but they didn't. They still carried on serving the Avodah Zorah. Our Sedra starts off in 2047, which is about 51 years after the nations are split up. And Avraham Avinu was looking for guests, and he sees three men which HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought to him, who were actually Malachim, but they came in the guise of men. And he said to them like this. He said, "Yukach no mat maim, let there be taken a little bit of water. V'rachatzu ragleichem, and wash your feet. V'hishoanu tachas ha'etz, and rest under the tree." You must have had a rather good tree with olive foliage, which was a good place to eat on a hot day. "V'echo paslechem, and I'll make you a suda." And he and they said, okay. And he made them a whole suda, a whole meal. So I'm going to just to concentrate on that one pasuk. Yukach no ma'at maim. Let a little bit of water be taken. What do you mean, let it be taken? Because, of course, Avraham Avinu had loads of servants. So some of my servants will draw water for you, sufficient for what you need. V'rachat suraglechem, and wash your feet. Interesting that he said, you'll wash your feet. After all, he had servants. And he could have said, v'yisrachat suraglechem, your feet will be washed. In other words, I'll get servants to wash your feet for you. Because that was quite normal in those days, that a servant would wash feet. No, you wash them. V'hishoanu tachas ha'etz, and rest under the tree. It doesn't actually tell you quite clearly where they ate their meal, but the general assumption seems to be that they ate under the tree. That means they didn't actually go into the house at all. Yeah, well, omed alem tachas ha'etz. Yeah. So it sounds like they actually stayed under this tree. Right, it was a rather nice place to sit. And they ate there. And when they asked where Soren, he said, no, she's in the tent. So in other words, you know, we're outside, she's inside. Now, Rashi, obviously every word in the Torah is meant to be understood something. There's a lesson, we don't always know them, but there's a lesson on every aspect of the Torah. So Rashi says, and wash your feet. What was this? Why was he telling them to wash their feet? I mean, you know, what was the important point? So Rashi says, very interesting, he says like this, Kosova, he thought, Shehem Arvim, that they are Arabs. Shemishtachemim, that bow down, La'avak raglehem, to the dust on their feet. In those days, people worshipped everything but Hashem. They found all sorts of things to worship. He thought they were Arabs that worship the dust of their feet. The Hikpid, and he was careful, Shaloi lahachnis avodas kuchovim the beise. And he was careful, I don't want to bring an idol into my house. Right. So what we need to ask ourselves here is like this. Why would he imagine they were Arabs, which hadn't actually started to exist yet? Because as far as we understand, Arabs come from Yishmael. So obviously it meant people similar to Arabs. So why would he think they were Arabs? What made him think like that? And why would he think that they worshipped the dust of their feet? We do know that the general pattern in those days was the Goyim worshipped the stars. We call them Akum. They worship the stars. And although it was completely wrong, there's a reasoning behind this, that it seems we are not aware of this, that B'in Shalem made the stars in a way that somehow have an effect or have also tell you something about your future. Each nation had its pattern in the stars that gave them some sort of insight into their strengths and their weaknesses and their future. Avraham Avinu was bucky in these things, right? Avraham Avinu himself said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I've seen the stars, I shouldn't have children. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, no, you're not going to be under the level of the stars, which why the Gemara says, Ein Mazal Yisrael. But the nations of the world did have this. That means there was some natural thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, some imprint in the stars that gave them some knowledge about their lives. You must understand, Adam HaRishon, who lived 930 years, and there was no street lamps, had plenty of time to look at the stars, and possibly he himself was the one who gave them this knowledge. Josephus writes that Avraham Avinu taught the whole concept of astrology to the Egyptians. Which is actually very interesting because Paro gave Avraham Avinu, it says, a load of mikneh. But the Pasuk then, he says, he had gold and silver. So the Netziv says, where was his gold and silver from? Because while he was in Mitzrayim, those few months, he taught. And he taught and he had, and they paid him. He would, you know, he would get he was a famous character and he had tremendous knowledge. Avraham Avinu was a very, very clever man. The Pasuk says that Shlomo HaMelech was the cleverest man that ever existed, more even than Eson HaEzrachi. Chazal say Eson HaEzrachi is Avraham Avinu. That he's even cleverer, even greater chacham than Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu was a greater chacham, and he knew astrology. So in those days, the Goyim all saw something in the stars that gave an indication about their lives. They went then, they took it from there, the mistake of worshipping those. That means they brought korbanos to these stars, hoping that would somehow influence their lives. Okay, but that was the norm. So why would Avraham Avinu think these people were Arabs? And why would he think they worshipped the dust of the earth?
So we always say Arabs came from Yishmael.
Exactly, we normally say they came from Yishmael, so what's going on here? So now we have a clan in Shas. Avraham Avinu presumably knew Shas. He was very bucky in Torah. I mean, he probably didn't learn Daf Yomi, but he knew Shas. Chazal tells us Avraham Avinu had a Masechta Avodah Zorah. Only his Masechta had 600 parokim. Our Masechta Avodah Zorah then got 5. He had a Masechta Avodah Zorah with 600 parokim. So he was very, Avraham Avinu was very, very clever, very well learned. So he looked at these people and he said, oh, they're Aravim, and they worship the. But it's called a Porish, Miruba Porish, says the Gemara. Whenever somebody comes from when you've got a mixture and something comes out from the mixture, you say kol to porish, miruva porish. He's probably one of the majority. Well, since all the nations worship the stars, why do you think these men worship the sand? Simple answer is like this. The nations in those days were very careful about their yichus. That means they kept their nation. If you're a Mitzri, you married a Mitzri, and your children were Mitzrim, and your grandchildren were Mitzrim, they had a purity in their lineage. Each nation kept to itself. Arvim simply means a mixture of nations. It's a mixture, directly. Now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created sent three malachim in the guise of human beings. What face did he give them? Well, he wouldn't have made them look like Cushim, or Mitzrim, or Ashurim, or Arpachshadim. He would have made them individual. But Avraham Avinu knew the nations. He was in Ur Kasdim and he debated with all of them. He knew what the nations looked like. And he looked at these three men, and they don't look like any of the nations that he knew. So he said, they're Arvim, they're a mixture of nations. That means they come from a mixed lineage. Half caste, I think, is in English. They're a mixture of lineage. Arvim just merely means Mu'urav, mixed up. And the Gemara and the Pasuk says the Arabs were notorious for infidelity and immorality. So Arabs were normally, they were the example, the Arabim were normally given as an example of people who do not keep the purity of their lineage. So therefore they look, that's why Arabim means, oh, that's why there's the Arabim, they're obviously some nation that I'm not aware of. They're not a nation per se, they are from a mixture. Ah, if you're a mixture, you don't have a mazel. Mitzrayim had its mazel. Ashur had its mazel. Right? Kush had its mazel. If you're a lineage, which mazel are you going to have? You want one grandfather's this nation, another grandfather's that nation, which you've not got a mazel. So therefore they didn't worship the stars. They wouldn't want to worship the stars. So they would therefore go to the next most greatest influence on their lives, which would be the earth, sand of the earth. All right. So he said like this, Avraham Avinu, wash your feet. And because I don't want to bring Avodah, he didn't say that to them, because his intention being, I don't want them to bring Avodah Zorah into the house. What's wrong with bringing Avodah Zorah into the house? I mean, he's not doing it, he's not doing anything wrong. Is it possible in the Torah? Below Sovi, To'evo, El Beisecho, you mustn't bring To'evo. And Chazal tells us that means a pestle. Some sort of idol that you mustn't allow it in your house. I wondered about other aspects of idolatry, and actually the Rambam says anything that appertains to an idol would be forbidden to bring into the house. Just therefore as an aside issue, I'm quite worried about this. If you have a domestic help who's a religious Catholic and she wears a tzelem round her neck, you might have a problem of not allowing her to bring it into the house and therefore have to tell her to leave it at home when she comes. That could well be halacha lemaisa. I'm sorry again?
I see her all the time.
Yeah? It might be a major problem. I don't know. It's an interesting shayla to ask. Oh, wait, give me a chance. The point out this is that you're not bringing it, the guy's bringing it. But it's a furusha mishne avodah zorah that even if the goy brings it, it's an issa drabonon, right? Yeah, there is actually a whole problem of renting out homes to somebody who's going to take avodah zorah into the house. Tosafot says the world nowadays is lenient on that point. So Tosafot, because they don't do it on a permanent basis, and Tosafot says it's only your own home is deraisa, your own home is din Torah, your home where you don't live in is only drabonon.
People say it's not Avodah Zorah anyway.
What?
It represents Avodah Zorah.
Yeah, okay, that's why I started off by saying it's not just the actual idol, but things that appertain. The Rambam says even things that appertain to the idol. So if it's a tzelem, it could well be appertaining to the idol. Right? Depends.
Somebody manufactured earrings.
Yes.
And he asked the Shadi, can you make to London as well?
Yes.
And he was told it's not an Avodah Zorah.
Okay, maybe. Yeah, right. I'm just saying, yeah, the shadow of the interesting shadow. It's not poshut. It's not a pesel, but it appertains to a Pesel, and the Rambam says even things that appertain, you have to find out how far we go in this appertaining. I have various heterim. The Bach says nowadays nobody's aware of Avodah Zarah, they have no idea what they're doing.
No, every hotel, Gosh hotel room has got a Bible in it.
Yeah. No, that's true, but that's not your renting. You, when you go into a hotel room and not sure they can't put you into another room, which case you're not a proper soicher, so therefore it's not the same, right? A Yiddish hotel would have the problem. I don't think the Yiddish hotels, I think you go to the Normandy, I don't suppose they've got by, but they're certainly not a new bit. Right. Okay, coming back to this. So, if Avraham Avinu asked me the Shaila, I would have said to Avraham Avinu, I've got at least four or five heterim for you. Because, look, let's face it. If Avraham Avinu, you're not Jewish, you're a Ben Noach. Ben Noach doesn't have this din. All right? Avraham Avinu said, but I keep all the din of the Torah as well. But Avraham Avinu, you don't know they serve Avodah Zarah. Yeah, they're background clear. You're not taking it in, the guy will be taking it in. They're not even going into the house, they're eating under the tree. Right? So, you know, you're being a bit machmir. Avraham Avinu was very, very careful. So you understand, though, even though they might not go into the house at all, but they might, and even though they're taking it to their own accord, and even though he's a Ben Noach, he's not Chayev, and even Avraham Hikpid, that's what I says, he was Makpid. He was careful. Right? Good? All right. Quite no problems with that. Avraham Avinu was very, very careful about every mitzvah he did. Right? Absolutely fine. My problem is then, Avraham Avinu, I don't understand you. You've run from a small fire to a big fire. Why? Well, you all know the story of Chanah and Shiva Bonecha. Except that she wasn't called Chanah, she was called Miriam. But never mind. Either Chanah or Miriam. The story where all seven sons were Moshe Nefesh al Kiddush Hashem. The Kaiser said to each one of them, serve Avodah Zarah, and they refused. The last one, the little one, he said to them, he saw he was losing the game, so he said, I'll throw my signet ring on the floor, and on that signet ring was a sort of engraving, something to do with Avodah Zarah, and he said, you just pick it up, and that's, I'll leave, and then I'll leave you alone. And the child refused, and he was killed. He was Moshe Nefesh, not to even look like serving Avodah Zarah. Now, it's paskened in Rambam that. All right? Also important you should know. Your shoelace comes undone, and you're opposite an Avodah Zarah. You have to turn your back to the Avodah Zarah to bend down to tie your shoelace. Right? Yeah, your wallet falls on the floor. You can't bend down to pick up the wallet opposite the Avodah Zarah. Even though you've got no, your knife's in the Avodah Zarah, it looks like you're bowing down to it. You turn your back to the Avodah Zarah and you pick up the wallet. So, Avraham Avinu, if you think these Arabs have got sand which they worship, which is Avodah Zarah, how can you bow down to them? You're going against the Rambam, which of course the Rambam definitely would have kept. Right? And that's worse, that's you're doing it. He didn't want them, he was being careful that the goyim shouldn't bring Avodah Zarah into his house, which might or might not be a problem. And he's bowing down in front of an Avodah Zarah. How could you do a thing like that? I've never seen anybody ask that question, it's just a meritic question. It's what's called marisayin, right? This child, incidentally, gave up his life for it. That's a very big chiddush, to give up your life. We do know that Avodah Zarah, even Avizrayu, that means even an issa which is to do with Avodah Zarah, is also Horeg Bal Yavo. He has to give up his life. But Maris Ayin is taking it a long way. But you see, if the way the Gemara brings it in Gitti, you've all learned the Gemara in Gitti now, you've probably learned it on Tisha B'Av, that it sounds like it was the Romans doing it, which wasn't Shas HaShmad. Which would be a very big chiddush where he gave his life, but the Yaivetz writes that this story took place in the days of the Hashmonoim. Right? So in the days of the Hashmonoim, it was a Shas Hashmad. It was a time when they were trying to oikum Yiddishkeit. And then the din is, you have to give up your life even for a milag. So we understand why he gave up his life. But Avraham Avinu, you're blatantly going against that din and bowing down to these, but these are Arabs, and they've got sand, and you think the sand on their feet is an Avodah Zarah. Oh, we don't understand why it should be. I mean, that's what Avraham Avinu felt. So why are you bowing down? You're doing a big avera. Well, a little avera, but it's not like you to do it. No. As I was saying, you can't even pick up a wallet. A person drops his wallet. So he's got to look around. If he's in front of an idol or a cell, something like that, he mustn't bow, pick up the wallet. Now, anybody who's watching him knows very well all he's doing is picking up the wallet. No, it looks like he's bowing down to that. That, understand? Very important. Right? Somebody told me he travels to the Far East, and in the Far East you get places where they have idols, literally idols in the hotel lobby. You have to be careful what you do, you know, if you're sort of, you know, right? Right. Yeah. Well, if he was mapped not to take it into the house, so he considered this dust. Oh, sorry.
You could never go on any ground.
Oh, wait. Good to the point. Now. My question like this is like this. What does it mean they bowed down to the dust of the feet? Let's consider, what does that mean? I've got actually three different shots. I don't know if I'm going to get out. Three different ways of understanding it. You'll tell me what you think. You've plumped full on, so I'll start with your way. Yeah. You could say it means they bowed down to the general dust of the earth. So it says the dust of their feet. It means the dust under their feet. They bowed down to dust of the earth. Because the dust of the earth, after all, the whole world feeds off the dust of the earth. In that case, I've got a lovely heter for Avraham Avinu. Why? Because the Gemara says, a goy bows down to Avodah Zorah, he makes osabah, no, it becomes a pestle, it becomes an idol. If he bows down to something which is mechuba, which is part of the earth, it doesn't become an idol. Vleya hori maria. So he bows down to a hill, that's allowed. He bows down to a river, you can drink the water. Right? He bows down to a tree, it's alright, the tree's mutter. The only thing is, if you plant the tree to make an idol, that's different, it's called an asherah. But he can't forbid the light of the bow down to the moon, does that mean we can't have the light of the moon? No. Anything mechuba, anything in its natural state, he cannot make forbidden. So we can now answer Rabbeinu Poshut. If they worship to the sand of the earth, that's mechuba. Because mechuba doesn't mean stuck on. Anything that's in its natural state, a river, is called mechuba. So anything in its natural state is not, does not become an idol, can't get the law of an idol. So therefore he could bow down to these Arabs because although they worship the sand, it wasn't an idol. It doesn't have the law of an idol. Very nice. I've answered Avraham Avinu. But then you've got the other way wrong. Why could he not take it into... Why was he worried they'll take it into the house? It's not an idol. Because it doesn't... It's mechuba. Wait, one second. We're starting off with this chat that it's they worship the general earth, sand of the earth. So therefore, the bit on their feet would only be a little bit of it. Now that you don't know, that's considered an idol. The whole thing, the earth generally, the sands, the general sands would be the idol. So a bit on the feet would not be considered taking the feet idol into this house. So just like he should be allowed, I'm saying he's allowed to bow down to them. Why? Because although it's sand on his feet, right? Nevertheless, it's not an idol. Why? Because the general sand is all mechuba. So therefore, for the same token, he should be allowed to take it into the house. But it's only a bit of the sand. Therefore, I'm not taking that pshat. Right? I'm not learning that pshat. I'm learning the sand on his feet. Right? So now, if we talk about the sand on his feet, so we have to consider a different point. Therefore, we say like this. They didn't bow down to the general sands of the earth, which was mechuba, and therefore wouldn't be an idol altogether. They bowed down to the sand on their feet. Now, let's consider that for a minute.
All right, good.
All right, but now, let's consider, what does that mean? How does it become an idol? I mean, it's a bit difficult to bow down to your own feet. You have to sort of allow contortionists to do that. So exactly how did it become an idol? Right? So, I've got now a split into two. My first suggestion is, it didn't mean they bowed down to the soil that has sand on the feet as they walked along, because the sand on the feet as they walk along constantly changes. I will say like this, they bowed down to the sand of their feet at the end of the journey. Okay? That would make sense. Sort of, we've finished our journey, sort of this sand has come with me right till the end, right, worship it. And how does it become an Avodah Zorah? What did they do? Did Avraham Avinu think they'll get into the house and start contortioning themselves in his house? I mean, that would be serving Avodah Zorah in his house. Very, very unusual. So I'll say like this. The Rambam says, if a goy creates an idol, even before he worships it, it's an idol. Right? The very act of creating the idol makes it into an idol. Right? So I'll say like this. If we'll say that they worship the sand that accompanied them to the end of their journey, right? So when they reach the end, the journey's end, they have now created an idol. What? The sand that accompanied them to the end. So at the end of the journey, that takes on the law of an idol, of a pestle. Right? So now, very good. I don't want them to go into my house, because as they come into my house, I say, ah, Higanu, we've arrived. And it's now, thank goodness, you know, we've got this sand, and this sand has accompanied us all the way. This is my... and they've created the idol by the very fact that it's now the finished object. And it's, so now we understand very good why Avram Avinu ran towards them. Right? He ran towards them. He ran to them to be nice to them. But besides that, by running towards them, he stopped them before they got to the end of their journey. Right? He stops them in their tracks before they get to the end of the journey. Good. So it's not an idol yet. So he can bow down, because it's not an idol yet. But he didn't want to let them come all the way into the house, because if they come all the way to the, if they get to the end of the journey, it would now be an idol, and they've taken an idol into the house. So that fits in beautifully. And we now understand why he said, wash your feet. And he wasn't sending any servants to wash their feet for them. Why? Because the Rambam Paskens, a goy who breaks his idol, it becomes and is no longer an idol. If a yid breaks it, it stays an idol. Pieces of idol. So now, if he would send one of his servants who didn't deserve a Avodah Zorah, it would it have little bits of pestle all over his all over the floor of his under his tree. But because they would wash their feet, it will ruin the whole principle of the idol. It would be not be an idol anymore because they've broken it by washing their feet. So now it's brilliant why he says wash your own feet. It wasn't lack of chesed; it was because you had this worked out. And we know why he could bow down to them before they finished their journey, because it wasn't an idol yet, because they hadn't finished the journey. And we understand why it becomes an idol as they enter the home, because they finally created the whole idol as they came in. Right.
But they want to stop here. Avram Avinu stopped them. Their journey wasn't because they could have carried on longer.
Yeah, no, so if he stops in the middle, where you mean maybe their destination wasn't even his house?
Therefore they haven't finished it.
Well, no, because once they come to his house, they're resting, and that's the journey's end. I mean, you mean you could say like this, the final end. Yeah, if it was the final end, you've got some share, what does he care about coming into the house then, because not in the journey's end, right?
Isn't sitting under the tree and resting, that's not the journey's end.
Okay, so I'm saying, he stopped them before that, when they came, I'm suggesting, when he gets to the tree, it's journey's end, so he says, wash your feet before you come under the tree. The tree is, in any case, the problem, of course, the tree is not a house. There is actually a chumra not to even bring Avodah Zorah into an outhouse. So it could be under the tree was like an outhouse. Okay. That's an only drabon in the outhouse. Okay. Okay. I'm not so happy with that pshat. Because the idea, the concept that by finishing the journey's end, that's the creation of a pesel, is a little bit forced. It's not really a proper creation when you're coming to journey's end. They're not really trying to create a pesel. It's not like he hews it out and cuts it out or something. It's just sort of by the way.
But by that would create it.
No, because I'm not saying he was worried of they actually bow down. First of all, bowing down to your feet is very difficult. And second of all, they wouldn't allow any Avodah Zorah in his house. I'm saying the creation of the pestle would be the actual creation of the surah, the way it looked on his feet. That would be their final idol. All right. I think the simple pshat is that they worship the sand of the feet all the time. Just the general sand of their feet. That's avak raglehem. The problem, of course, is the bowing down. And how did it become an idol? They were walking along the way. I mean, it's very difficult to bow down. But there you need to know another halacha, that serving Avodah Zorah is to make a pestle, to make an idol, is not just bowing down. The Rambam passed quite clearly that serving Avodah Zorah, even if Goy says to about an idol, Eliato, you are my God, that already makes it, it's already Avodah Zorah, and that already makes it into a pestle. So according to that, the simple thing, it meant that they worshipped the sand on their feet. And Avraham Avinu was worried that at some time during the journey, they would have said, Eliato. Right? Why? We don't understand the mentality of saying such a thing, but right, they said it in those days. So at some point in the journey, they would have said to the sand on their feet, Eliato, you are my God. And they would have, and that would have made it a Pesel, because just that expression alone is a proper Avodah Zorah. And therefore he didn't want to bring it into the house. That would be the simple, most understandable explanation of what's going on. But then we're back to the question, how on earth can you bow down to them, even to be nice to them? You are bowing down opposite what you think is an Avodah Zorah. That's the problem.
Until they get to the house.
Maybe.
And he stops them on the way.
Come here. Go back to my second chat. All right. So I would like to say like this. There is a whole sugya in Shas. And we've just said like this. Mechubah does not become an idol. Right? Bows down to a hill, bows down to a river, doesn't become an idol. The Rambam says like this. They bow down to a river. It's not an idol. If there's a wave come off the river onto the ground, onto the ground, right? And he bows down to that, it's not an idol, it's all part of the natural. If he picks up the water with his hands, and then he bows down to that, then it's an idol. Right. That's cool, because mechubah does not become an idol, tolush does. Now what's the din? Tolush ula besayf chibroi. You toilet something, you take something off what's from the ground and you put it back. What? Now that's a shaila in all shas. It's very negel alocha. Somebody came up to me and said he was renting a home and he had a ganef and the ganef broke the door. So he said, is he chayiv because he's a soicher? And a soicher has the dinamo of shoma socha. He's chayiv on gneva be'aveda. He's chayiv for the theft. Right? So therefore, when the ganef broke the door open, maybe he's got to pay for the new door, or can he ask the landlord to pay for the new door? Okay? So I said to him, that's tolush, ulabasayf chibroi. That's a door was tolush, it's cut from the ground. Right? The din is like this. There's no din of a shomrim on ground. On ground, a shomer sochas does not have to pay for gneva aveda. Right? I said that this is tolush l'b'seif chibrei, and most of the Rishonim hold that tolush l'chibrei, as far as money is concerned, is called mechubah. So you are not chayav for the door, your landlord is. Right? Because although you're a shomer socha, the equivalent of a shomer socha, nevertheless, you don't have to pay, he has to pay, right? Because there's no law of shomrim on mechubah. By avodah zorah, tolush ulabasayf chibroi is called tolush. That means a goy mines stone or marble and he makes an avodah zorah, so it was mechubah, he's tolush it, and then he makes the pesel and he sticks it to the ground to leave it there, so that's tolush ulabasayf chibroi. It's called tolush and it stays an idol. Right? Even though he's now been mechabrit to the ground, it stays tolush. By Avodah Zorah, tolush of Chibroi is called tolush. It's negea to a base of Potichaim. In a base of chorus, a mace is osabahanor, the things round a dead person are osabahanor. Says the Gemara that you build something over the mace, right? That the Seva, or Bebinyan, so the one says, that's Tolush Ulubasayf Chibroi, and it is Osabanor, because Tolush Ulubasayf Chibroi by a mace has the same din as Avodah Zorah, it's called Tolush. So therefore, that Seva will be Osabahanor. What's not Osabanor is the ground round the mace, right? Because that was Mechubah. Now there's
oil.
Sorry?
What about the oil when it's raining?
I'm not sure whether... If you make an oil which is made for the people to come and daven by the mace, it's probably easier. And so this is made some purely for the mace. You've gone into another shaila. Now, there's a shaila though. Now, whenever they did make a kever, they dig the soil, put it to the side, they put the mace in, and they cover it with soil. What's the din of that soil? So Rabbeinu Yeshaya says... But that's also Osa Bahanor. That means the very soil on top of the nace is Osa Bahanor. Why? It's Tolush, the Besov Chibroi, it stays Tolush. Says the Rosh, no, and most of the Rishim hold like the Rosh, it's not. Even though it seems it should be, because it's Tolush Besov Chibroi, says the Rosh, the Gemara says only if they build something, that means they make a proper binyan, then it's called Tolush. But the soil, that, if you, even though you're a Tolush it and put it back, that's Mutar Bahanor. The Gemara brings that the Yidden Amratzim were taking bits of soil from the top of Rav's kever, because Rav was such a great man, they felt it would have some sort of benefit to them. They were taking bits of soil. So people came to ask Shmuel whether they eat Osa Bahanor. So Shmuel said, no, it's Mutar Bahanor. So the Rosh says, no, because the soil, according to Ben Yishai, it means they took the soil at the side. But according to the Rosh, no, even the soil on top would be, is Mutar Bahanor, because even though normally Tolush Sev Chibrei Bab Mace is called Tolush, but the soil, I suppose it's because it's not a real thing, it's just bits of soil, that, when you put it back, right? And it makes you understand, we can understand that, because we said like just before, if a goy bows down to a hill, it doesn't become Osa. But the chances are people have walked on that hill and be loads of pebbles that he's kicked, right? Will they become Osa? Is the answer no, because it's the bits of the hill that are the sand, whatever it is, that doesn't. So now I can understand, according to the Rosh, I've got a simple answer why Avraham Avinu could bow down opposite the Malachim, and he wasn't worried he's bowing down opposite Avodah Zorah. Answer, because the sand of the feet would have the law of Tolush Ulebaseif Chibre. It stuck to their feet as they walk along, but when they stand, the sand is now back on the ground. So it's Tolush Ulebaseif Chibre. So according to the Rosh, with sand, Tolush Ulebaseif Chibre is called Mechuvah. So now, it's Mechuvah, it didn't have the states of Avodah Zorah. If it doesn't have the states of Avodah Zorah, Avraham Avinu could bow down to them, and it wouldn't look like it's bowing to Avodah Zorah. But when they walk into the house, it's be a Tolush, and it's not be Mechuvah again, because it's gone into the house. So then it would have the states of Avodah Zorah, and would be us to bring into the house. So now we also got a very good explanation why Avraham Avinu stopped them in their tracks. Right? Because if they stand still, he's okay. Right? Tolush, and the same Chivrei is Tolush.
Why do you wash the feet?
No, why wash the feet? Because no, because if they now walk into the house and it would stay properly Tolush, that would be worse. But while they're standing on the ground, his face, he's been, just before you come into my house, wash it off.
He could wash it off.
No, yeah, okay, I haven't done it. Good. I haven't explained why he couldn't send the Avodah to wash it off. Because it wasn't the Avodah Zorah yet. Well done. Yeah, okay, good, agree with you. Well, just one point, just answer Rainey and Shire though. To answer Ben Yishaya, it's possible that Tolush Besov Chibroi, what they're talking about, you see, this business of digging a kever, you take spades and dig. That's you doing it. But when somebody walks along, the whole act of Tolush is not really, it's by the way. It's too complicated to go into, but there's a whole Shaila about making shu'uvim for a mikveh. And the whole Shaila about if you kick water into the mikveh as you're walking along, is that called shu'uvim? So it could well be that Ben Shah will also agree that when the whole Talisha is like by the way, it's not with a proper act of Talisha, then even he would dig that Tolush Besov Chibroi. So we've not answered why Avraham Avinu could happily bow down opposite them, even though, and it wasn't Avodah Zorah, and yet nevertheless he was worried if they would come into the house. How do you know he didn't have matting on the floor?
Biases in the middle as well.
Biases.